Which is a more likely reunion, Vinny? Mauricio Pochettino and Tottenham or Vinny Perth and Dundalk?
There was the setup. I see it.
OTB AM. Weekdays from 7:30 AM. Listen on the OTB Sports app. The OTB Podcast Network with GetZetGo. Quick Start Car Insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetZetGo.ie.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise? The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. GamblingCare.ie.
Well, Everton, strange old times, really. They get Carlo Ancelotti. They're delighted. He's a big name. He's footballing royalty. They're spending money. The new stadium's on the way. And it's all just a bit meh. Not terrible, but a bit meh. And they finish 10th. And suddenly, then Carlo up sticks, says thank you very much for the 11 million sterling a year he was moving, and heads back to Real Madrid. And Everton are not too sure how to feel about that. So we're going to ask Patrick Boyland of The Athletic. Are they that sad to see Ancelotti go? Nuno Espirito Santo seems to be the early favourite to get the job. So Patrick Boyland will join us later on. 53106, the text number. We're at Off the Ball on Twitter. We'll get the view on what's going on in Merseyside. But David Snaid is with us. Hello, David.
Evening, Joe. What's the crack?
Yeah, all good. So a few things to talk to you about. Obviously, this live score news, pretty interesting. Champions League rights have changed a lot from our youth growing up watching Bill and the three lads. It's all very different now. And obviously, there is an Ireland match tomorrow. Wanted to throw something at you first of all, though. I suspect this is going to be a thing, it would seem. It's happening at too many grounds now where fans are there. So a bunch of friendlies on this evening. I'll give you the scores in a second, everybody. But just on what's kind of been discussed on Twitter, debated on Twitter at length. England are playing Austria this evening at the Riverside Stadium in Middlesbrough. And here's a BBC 5 Live commentary of the game. And it's John Murray here on commentary. So we'll just join it here as the players take the knee, and you can probably guess what's about to happen.
So the game about to begin. Well, that is quite a reaction to the players taking a knee. There was a lot of booing there. I have to say, I'm quite taken aback by how loud that was. But now it has been, you know, after a moment there, that was drowned out by applause. And we're ready for the start of the match.
There we are.
Yeah, like I had a feeling that's what it was going to be, because I actually watching the start of it, I saw it happen. And one of my uncles is actually from Middlesbrough, and he's lived in Ireland for the last 30 odd years, and he's the only person that I can go off and I can safely say it's not representative of the people I know who are from Middlesbrough and his family. But it was quite a surprise to hear how loud those boos were when I was watching it on TV.
Like, there's something brewing here. I don't know what the objection to it is, but it's forcefully felt by loads of people, and it's like very easy and tempting to dismiss them as idiots or worse, and that's probably not the right thing to do. But at the same time, you just look at this very simple gesture, which was born off the back of the George Floyd death, which the footballers understood and intended to mean this is a stance against racism. That's all it is. It's a simple gesture against racism. Clearly hugely important to a lot of the black players, and you would hope the white players agree with that and are standing in solidarity. And that's all it's meant to be. It's a gesture. And it's, you know, a pretty simple thing. And I don't know how it's become this point of contention now where it's being booed. You know, I get if you're looking at it, it's a bit empty, it's a bit hollow, I don't like it, but like to be absolutely hating this thing where you're booing that loudly in a stadium, booing black players taking a knee. I don't know, like this is now going to become a thing all summer.
Well, first of all, you'd hope it's not, especially because there's going to be quite a few games in England too. Like, it's hard to comprehend what would drive someone to actually boo what taking a knee is all about, because it's about fighting racism, it's about fighting discrimination, it's about promoting equality. That's essentially what it is. It's basically a sign of decency for people. And if you actually cannot just see that, well then, to be honest, like there's not, I don't know, right? I don't know all those people who are in that stadium, but I would not want to be associated with any single person in that stadium who was doing that, because they're not decent people. They're just not. And you can't sugarcoat it. I know I mentioned there, my initial first instinct was, I was going to ring my uncle and was like, what's going on there? Like, you know, the guy kind of slag them because they're called Smoggies, people from Middlesbrough, because of the industry and all the rest of it. And I always slag him, but he's a thoroughly decent fella. But at the same, and my first instinct was to think of him, you know, but at the same time, like, how else can you describe those people other than people who just aren't decent?
Yeah. I don't know. That's, really. Yeah. No, I don't know, because you can get into, because you can get into the area giving too much credit.
I don't think you can look at any other way. If you build what that stands for, you're basically showing yourself up for, you don't believe in equality of human beings. So where does that leave you as a person? You're nowhere. So you shouldn't, like, there's no other way of describing it. You can't, like, I don't think it's something that you look for nuance in. I don't think you look for trying to see that other point of view. If you're the being what taking the knee stands for, you can now listen, I know Wilfred Zaha didn't, he said he doesn't want to do it because he feels it won't achieve anything or something like that, which is, that's a different argument.
It is, yeah.
But if you're building what it actually stands for, well then, like, lowest of the low.
Yeah, it's hard to disagree with that. I mean, I think we should definitely listen to the people booing and see what their logic is, and because I can't figure it out. I mean, initially, when this kind of started, there were people saying, well, this is about the Black Lives Matter movement and there's extreme aspects of that political movement and so on and so forth. But, like, that is not what the understanding of the players was. You know, the players here are not getting into that. It's not a Black Lives Matter movement on the players' behalf, I don't think. I interpret it as George Floyd was killed in this manner. This highlights the racism around the world, which is systemic. We need to do something about this. And it was a very emotional time. And they took the knee and they've continued taking the knee just as that simple. It's just that simple point. And if you asked any of the players, why are you taking the knee? I guarantee you that's all they'd say. And so to try and almost, laden it with some ulterior, you know, state control. I don't even know. Like, you know, I think as you said, there's a danger of giving them too much credit here, that this is thought out beyond the obvious, which is a really, and the obvious is a really grim thought, that they just boo it because they don't want, you know.
If it walks like a duck and it quacks like a duck and it was like a racist. I know that's horrible to say, but that's what it's about here. Like there is some confusion because sometimes you hear stuff like, when after the knee is taken, sometimes they say it's to fight discrimination or it's to fight racism, or they'll explicitly say it's Black Lives Matter. There's no, but like I'm saying, it's just that is like literally like a white person in a serious place of privilege. I just see it as it's a sign of strength against discrimination and standing up to it by taking a knee, and also just showing a bit of decency that you actually acknowledge what's going on in the world. And if you can't see that and you can't actually accept that, and you think, oh, it's all lives matter and all this nonsense, like, I'm sorry, but like it's I know obviously I wasn't really expecting to talk about it and you caught me on the hop a small bit, but like, it's the natural reaction is to just not give them the credit that sometimes people naturally would want to try and see what the other side of the argument is. I just don't think they deserve a single ounce of it.
No, I think, look, we're both caught in the hop. I only heard the audio about a minute ago before coming on air, I mean. So I just said to JP, our producer, look, this is just, I've just seen this. Let's grab it, let's play it out, and let's see what people think. We might play it again just if you're tuning in. So this is John Murray, BBC 5 Live, and the England game is kicking off. And, I mean, he's even taken aback. This isn't, as you'll hear, this is not 100 people booing. This is a lot more.
So the game about to begin. Well, that is quite a reaction to the players taking a knee. There was a lot of booing there. I have to say, I'm quite taken aback by how loud that was. But now it has been, you know, after a moment there, that was drowned out by applause. And we're ready for the start of the match.
Yeah, like, penny for your thoughts if you're a black player on that pitch in an England jersey. That's what's really terrible.
That was it, because, again, I was actually watching it just as I was doing a bit of prep. And, that is telling that, in fairness as well, like, it did get drowned out pretty quickly, but it was very loud. Like, it wasn't, like you say, it wasn't just whatever, you can't, like, something. It wasn't something that you could dismiss as a minority. It was a significant, and even just where the camera angle was, the I think the player who was close in shot was the young lad Saka, who was at Arsenal.
Mm.
And as he got up, I was just kind of thinking, like, as you were saying earlier, like, what's he thinking? Like, he's probably thinking, why do I want to play in front of this?
Yeah.
Why am I here? Why? Like, and not even just him. Like, remember when it did start, I think it was Burnley Man City game. And I think the Burnley fans fly a plane over the Etihad, saying something like "All lives matter."
Yeah,
talking about that. And Ben Mee, the Burnley captain, came out after the game and he spoke very well about it, just as a club, just taking the fans out of people who did it to task and slaughtering them basically, and calling them out for what they were and what it stood for about the equality and stuff. And I think, I'm sure it isn't, and in fairness, the English FA, over the last few years, like what they've done with changing the kind of, with changing the perception around the team, and not so much the perception, but like the link between, say, the media and the fans, I think there's a lot more love for the English team now. And I think it's something that you'll see that they'll get on top of over the next couple of days, that they'll make a stand with it, you know.
Yeah, they should do. Look, we'll move off it. I mean, my instinct is to almost want to hear the people who are being interviewed and to hear what they have to say, hear what their logic is. At the moment, I just don't see a logic. This is not PC gone mad. This is not state control. This is not Black Lives Matter. You're so opposed to the intricacies of the politics of that movement. I don't know what this is, as you said, beyond something very worrying, which is outright racism. This is a simple gesture on the players' behalf against racism, nothing more, against discrimination, nothing more. And you might think it's a bit hollow and think it's served its purpose now because it happens all the time and it's happening thoughtlessly and therefore it's lost its impact. Wilfred Zaha was clearly of that opinion, and that's a different point, as you said. But like, I think that's an okay perspective to have if you want to have it. Personally, I think, what is the harm? And it's a little reminder every time that, you know, a lot of people feel that this issue has not been dealt with properly. But it's a different stratosphere to boo it loudly and to be supposedly then trying to clap the same players 2 seconds later, when frankly, I think a lot of those players would turn around and look at you with absolute disgust the way you behaved. So I don't know. I hope those fans are interviewed after the game. I'm now, because this is going to be a thing, I'm now curious enough to know, right, what is your logic for behaving this way? Because the vast majority of people don't understand why you're booing this. And to the vast majority, it's despicable. So you really need to explain this now. And the bigger picture is, if this, like every single game, England game is at Wembley bar one. So this has the potential to be such a horrible, divisive thing across the Euros. Do the Premier League get together and say, oh, look, this thing is just more hassle than it's worth. We need to bin this. You know, new season, fresh start. We're going to leave it behind.
I don't think he can do that. I think if it's something that the players believe in strongly, because it's even something that even like Tyrone Mings, obviously, who's in that England team and playing tonight actually as well. Like, he's pretty prominent in terms of when the campaign began, as a voice for it and talking about what it was, and it was of talking about discrimination, and it was talking about like bringing these issues to the fore. And like, a lot of stuff now is player led, which is great.
Yeah,
on a different context, Marcus Rashford and what he's achieved. But like, I don't think the Premier League are going to be in a position where they can just say, you know what, you can't do this anymore. I think it's going to come from the players. The players will decide. They'll be the ones to say, well, what's going to happen next? Because, like, in fairness, like, it is this new, don't want to overarch it, but like this age of where players kind of have found our voice a little bit and realised that they actually can do so much more than maybe what's been done previously. So I don't think it'll, and I think the worst thing they could do is say, do you know what, it's not worth the hassle, because it 100% is worth the hassle.
So, like, for instance, somebody, an anonymous texter, has texted in to say, and like, honestly, if this is the strength of the argument that's going to be coming from the booers,
if then he's anonymous, right? If he's anonymous, he doesn't even deserve it to be read out.
Well,
I'm sorry for like, getting that idea, but like,
he's speculating.
If he can't even, if this fella, whoever it is, and I haven't even heard where it is yet, but if someone's anonymously texting in about this issue and hasn't even got the balls to put his name to it, well, then that shows you where his argument is. That shows you the person he is. Now, listen, I could be totally wrong and jump the gun.
Yeah.
But like, I've no time for what he has to say. If he hasn't even got the gumption and the credit to put his name to an argument that's something to do with decency and to do with respect for human beings, what's the point?
Well, he or she says, lads, they're not booing against racism. They're booing against taking the knee because it's outdated now and people are sick of it. Just get on with the game.
would you give over? Would you cop yourself on me? Who is it? Like, come here. Like, come here.
Don't worry about it. I mean,
it's
3, 4, 5 seconds. Get on with the game. I mean, it's 3, 4, 5 seconds. And when you say it's outdated, race, the problem of racism is not outdated. None of the players feel that. And like the booing would only further their argument that it's far from outdated. I don't know.
Chains are outdated. Bill Coachings are outdated. Standing up for what's right in the world and standing up for your fellow man and woman. That's just common decency. And if people are in a position now where they can actually do it and feel as if they can actually make what they feel is a stand, all the power.
And a last point, again, to state the obvious here. Even if you look at this and you think this is a little corporate and this is a little bit PR and you don't actually believe that a lot of the players taking the knee are really thinking too deeply about the issue. They're just doing it because everyone else is doing it. That all may be true, right? But understand the rationale behind doing it. Understand that it does mean a huge amount to a lot of those players out there. And more to the point, there's no need to boo if you think all those things. Just stand there and think to yourself, yeah, I could take or leave this, or I think this is outdated, or I think this is a little bit PR-y for me. Think all those things. That's no problem. Mm. Maybe even say them to your mates when you're having a chat and you're debating the rights and wrongs of it. But to boo it, I mean, this is different. This is kind of a different level, and for that many people to boo it. So, I don't know. This ain't booing VAR, you know. This is really different.
And but you know, I must say, and even this, like I'm 23 years of age this summer, right? And I have to even admit now, over the last, since this has happened, like, it's actually, I've actually felt in this, not that I've been out because obviously lockdown, but I'm in a situation now where before you would hear stuff out and about and you might think, I don't agree with that, but you say nothing, you keep your mouth shut and you kind of ignore it. And I never felt as if I was part of an issue because I ignored stuff that had been said in company or that I would have heard. And whereas now I actually feel, do you know what? And it's only because, and I'll be honest, it's only because over the last year or so where I actually feel, you know what, actually, if you do hear something, you have to call it out. Mm. Even if it's a friend, even if it's in family, you have to call it out.
Yeah.
And like, there's no other way of going about it. Like this is just a totally different example, and I've probably gone off on a tangent, but it's something that's stuck in my head for years, right? So I used to live in Manchester, and I used to sell the Man United fanzine, United We Stand, Matt Busby Way before games. And United fans would be very good self-policing in terms of, like, genuinely would not have heard racist stuff. But there was, for a period, when Emmanuel Adebayor played for Man City after he left Arsenal, and there was a song. And I won't go into what the song was, but it basically referenced, it's well known at this point because how bad it was, but basically it referenced how one of his parents was washing elephants back in Africa, right? And I remember seeing these fellas singing, and they got called out, and they got a bit of a hiding by people of self-police. And obviously, you can't justify maybe the violence for it, but that kind of stuck with me. And it actually, in terms of what how sometimes you have to deal with these people, and those, some of those people who are beyond, I would like to think that if there was people who are clapping beside, they might have given them something a bit more stronger than a clap around the head, you know? Because sometimes that's all it needs to get a bit of sense into people too.
Let's chat about what you're actually on to chat about. So sorry, that's an 18-minute tangent there, but that's just kind of arrived, that news, in the last kind of while we wanted to bring it to you. So LiveScore. We were saying on the news round, I mean, I've LiveScore. I presume you've LiveScore. I guess maybe LiveScore is far more popular than I ever thought. I've never gone around asking people if they have LiveScore on their phone, but it's generally actually my go-to in terms of getting scores. So they have snapped up the Champions League rights package for Ireland. 16 games will still be on RTE on Tuesday nights. They've retained first pick. So you presume they're really good games on a Tuesday night. There are 16 games for Wednesday night matches. Again, first pick, which haven't been snapped up yet. We don't know where they're going to go. I'm not speaking with any insider info. I mean, I would presume Virgin will be interested given they've done the Champions League for the last number of years. But I don't know where they're going at all. That's TBC. BT are still going to hold the rights in Ireland and will show all the games as well. I don't really think many people, I don't think BT is as popular here certainly as Sky. So on LiveScore, all 137 matches in the Champions League from group stages right through to final will be streamed on the app. I mean, the two things I wondered about were, will we be able to Chromecast these easily enough onto our TVs? It seems we will, so that's good news. And then I was also kind of wondering about the quality of coverage around the games, and will we be getting studio treatment, or will it be just, you know, generic commentary team that we don't really know, and halftime of
ads and maybe the commentary team talking over highlights of the first half for 2 minutes, and then no post-match analysis, which would be kind of not great, I suppose, given what we were all raised on and, you know, how important the kind of panel is here and how much we like our punditry here. So I know you've been looking into all this. I've given just the bare details. What are you hearing or what are you writing about?
Yeah, so I basically, for the piece not so long ago, it's going to be going up for with the Irish Examiner later on, and being in the paper tomorrow. It's interesting that you mentioned BT, because I was speaking to a couple of people just in Irish TV and sports and stuff, and not that there's no merit about it, but a lot of people kind of don't want to kind of just will give you stuff off the record to use and stuff, rather than wanting to kind of put their head above the parapet, so to speak. But it's interesting, the BT deal, like, it's 1.2 billion to UEFA for over 3 years, like 400 million quid a year. And the sense from a lot of from people, especially within the Irish market, is that that's kind of been a bit of a game changer in terms of UEFA's attitude, whereby originally, before that, they would have been very big on keeping things terrestrial and keeping things free to air for as many people as possible, because that helped drive, obviously, say, ad revenue and all the rest of it, because they point to more viewers. And obviously, you're talking there about the RTE panel and the voice of, it's mad, but like, but for me, growing up in the 90s, it would have been like Clyde Tilsley and ITV and yeah. Ron Atkinson, and was it Gary Newbon back in ITV. But there's some of the stuff that's been said to me is that, like, UEFA now are kind of have stepped away a little bit away. They're not too fussed now about quality control, and they're not too fussed about if it is going to the maximum amount of people. They just want to get as much money as possible, and they realise now that that's where it's gone. And you're talking there, like, a guy got in touch with Live Score, and like, they wouldn't confirm if they're going to even have a studio with guests. And it's like, normally, like, before it would have been put to me that would have been a bit key thing as part of, say, a contract would be, and I know it's going to be, say, maybe boring for people who aren't, say, in an industry, but it's also key to them if it's part of their viewing experience, that, like, quality stuff in terms of, you have to have a studio to get the rights.
Yes.
So, like, they might have, like, you can't just, like, a fella, you know, venture capitalist could come in and say, well, we'll give you X amount of money, but they've got no infrastructure there to actually provide quality. UEFA back before maybe would have ignored the higher bid and gone with maybe something that was more sustainable, that kept their product on a certain level in terms of TV production. Whereas now, it's not the case. Like, and there is they could still rent a studio as well as Live Score and have maybe one couple of guests and do it for all the games, but it's not him. It's not going to be a kind of prerequisite, really. They don't think that maybe it's been as part of the contract that that's still the same. Because even little things, like, you have to have a studio, so you go out, you'll know this better than me, obviously, from your work with, say, with Virgin and the rugby, where you leave, say, a link to an ad, but it has to be from a studio, because it's the Gazprom ad that comes up, that this game is brought to you by Gazprom, and it has to, like, apparently, because the link for the ad comes from when you've set it from a studio, apparently it adds to the quality. I don't know. But now, stuff like that, little things, it's not the case. And I think it's like 1.2 billion BT paid for over 3 years. Different people were saying that they estimate then that the Irish market is probably worth 1-2% of that.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives you an idea of where you're looking at money-wise. And then, like, even little things, like, I spoke to Con Murphy, who people would know, who's a good commentator in Ireland, about it, because he's done stuff as a subcontractor for Live Score, commentating on the Portuguese football, on the Portuguese league for them, because they like Live Score have already got rights for, like, Serie A. They're an official partner for La Liga in terms of, I think, there's a highlights program thing they do, the Dutch league, and obviously the Portuguese league. And the old Satanta Studios in the Keys in Dublin, he was like saying it's like the United Nations of commentators in there. That there's like a little army of French commentators who live in Dublin who go and commentate on La Liga games as part of this subcontracting that's in these old studios in town, and that there's like Spanish commentators then who'll commentate on other games, and there's like Russian commentators going in who'll be doing stuff in the like Croatians for ice hockey and all. And he's like, it's just mad, this little kind of like little mini industry within it. And it kind of gives you an idea that people kind of think, oh, like the quality is maybe is going to totally diminish in terms of say commentating and all the rest, but for a lot of times it's done, what's the phrase is off tube or something, where the people are in a little booth kind of like commentating on the game, watching it on telly. And you might have like the primary game, they have the comment, you'll have the commentators there, like RTE would have, like say cost a fortune, obviously they'd have like George Hamilton there, or they'd have Jim Beglin would be one of them, Ronnie Whelan as a co-commentator, and obviously Tony Dunne who was as a reporter. And like the way it's going, it's looking as if it's going to get further and further away from that.
Well, on that, you know,
possibly
the off tube stuff is kind of interesting, because I think most viewers or listeners to radio would have no idea if it's off tube or on tube. The commentary, that is, I'm talking about, as in right across the pandemic, obviously, we have stopped sending the likes of Nathan and Steo Doyle and co-commentators to Premier League matches because they couldn't travel during the pandemic. So they were doing it off tube as well. I think in that same studio you're talking about. And like perversely, in some ways, the audio quality is better because you actually take up the TV feed, which has like these microphones all around the pitch. Whereas when we do it, I was going to say properly there, maybe that's not the right way to put it anymore. When we do it at the stadium, we just have our one...
A bit more authentic.
But we would just have our one mic there picking up the atmosphere in the background. Now, 1,000%, if you talk to the lads, and you can imagine it, you know, they say, oh, being there is just a gazillion times easier. You do a much better job. You're more on top of the game. Sometimes TV pictures show the wrong thing and you know, it suddenly cuts from a replay and like a player's in one-on-one and you've no idea it's happened. But I would suspect if you go through the text messages or the tweets from the last year plus of Sunday commentary games we've done, I doubt a single person has said it's diminished the quality or there's something different about this, you know. So you can see how if you're UEFA off tube at the match, we don't really care. And they obviously have just taken the view that fans ultimately, yeah, they'd prefer if there was really good analysis around it, but ultimately they're just coming for the sport. So let's just get in the most money. And we're too big to fail. Production values, we're too big to fail. And ultimately, I guess they'll be in control of the feed. So they'll still have X number of cameras at the game, high definition cameras, slow motion shots, all that stuff. Like UEFA will still be controlling the cameras at the stadium. So I guess they figure whatever happens around the showing of those matches, it'll be fine.
Yeah, no, like that does seem to be the case. And like even like you're looking at it from the point of view of like, I know there's issues, and it was something that I kind of asked in the article that'd be out about the issue with gambling, because obviously like Live Score would have say links with, you go on it, even so Richie talked about earlier about how it's like, it is so entrenched with betting essentially, where you click on and you're able to bet, and like it's part of a company, it's a parent company of like the umbrella part companies that are there with Live Score. There's like Live Score Bet, there's Virgin Bet, but then you go on the website, like even I did it earlier, and if you put Live Score into like the App Store and Apple and your iPhone and stuff, like the first app that comes up isn't actually for Live Score, it's for Betway, which kind of gives you an idea of like where it's at a little bit. And then you go on the app and then there's just pop-ups non-stop. Like it was more information, not like on that, like I did this piece for the Examiner. Like it does seem as if you're not going to need to have a gambling account to open up an account to watch it for next season, but that's only for next season. Like the three-year deal, the statement I got back from them was pretty vague and left it a little bit open that possibly this could change. So that doesn't really fill you with a bit of confidence of where it's at. It's not 100% certain that free to air for the next 3 years, but like they could change the terms of editions. Yeah, it's free to air, but maybe after a year or two or into year three, well actually you it's still free, but you have to open an account, you
right know? Well, that would be open. And look, it'd be remiss of me not to point out that our football show is sponsored by Paddy Power, and we always read out visit gambleaware.ie anytime we do a mention. But nobody has to open an account to listen to the content or view the content. Is that even allowed, that you'd have to open an account?
I don't know.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. Yeah. And that's the thing. And it was even like, I put it to them, and it was typical. It was like, you get in touch with them early this morning when obviously this happened, and you don't hear anything from them. And then you get back in touch, and then you get back in touch again. And then obviously you eventually just as you have your kind of, supposed to deadline, but are coming towards the end of it, that's when they get back in touch. And it was literally a paragraph, but it was interesting that in the statement that they did give, like, because one part of getting the list of questions, and it was like,
right,
is it only for next season? Is it definitely no gambling account needed? And he said for next season. And then, like, obviously they didn't expand on that. That was all they were giving me. They said they wouldn't comment on anything else.
Okay.
And so that's something to be, but whether or not it's going to be allowed, I don't know.
Mm.
Like, it was one thing was interesting was, I know you're talking there about casting, and well, it was kind of put to me as well that, like, it's not so much a case now of these apps, and so you can watch it so much on the go, that wouldn't be surprised if in a while, because of this, live score would be one of those permanent apps that are on your smart telly, and you wouldn't even need to cast it then.
Yes, like Netflix or any of those. Yeah.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah, like that's the long game a little bit, and it could even be more short to medium term now, because they've got something that would be of great significance. And like, I know we can listen, like, I don't bet and I don't gamble, so like, a lot of this kind of washes over my head a little bit, in terms of I don't really feel the urge, but I know for many more it's totally different. But I do think it's still this can be seen as a major win at the moment for people who are probably paying out a fair bit of money just to, maybe if they want to be Champions League, because like, they don't have to know.
Oh, well, like, at the moment, it's an absolute win for the consumer, in that suddenly every single game is free and they'll be able to stream it on their device or on their TV. Or to, you're still doing the Tuesday 16 games, and on the Wednesdays, we're presuming a broadcaster, quote unquote, will do the other 16 matches on the Wednesday. I mean, like, at the moment, it's a very good result. Like, there's no massive downside to it, I can see. There's this degree of almost, we're all approaching this with a degree of caution because it's new almost, but on the face of it, the betting concern you have aside, it looks like she's an absolute winner. I mean, and somebody made the point on the news round, it was either Will or Richie, like, a bunch of illegal streaming sites overnight have just taken a serious dint.
Yeah, and that, again, that was something that had been mentioned as well in this, is the fact that, like, People are used to now finding ways around not paying. So now they don't have to pay for an app, and the quality is going to be much better. And the risk is obviously for LiveScore to see if it works for them, and it's also for UEFA to see if it damages them. But I don't think it will, unless maybe people after a while realise that they've been hoodwinked somehow, and it is all just some major tie-up with for gambling. But at the moment, it just seems as if, because it is new, like, that's the thing, like, it's new, so you're kind of a little bit apprehensive about it, but it is a major, the game changer, really. And it's, even speaking to people within it, like, I know after, like, it was March time when Virgin were told that they were outbid, and they were kind of scrambling over the weekend. I think it was told on Friday, they were scrambling over the weekend to try and find who was actually taking it, and there was no one had thought of LiveScore, even though they were kind of by stealth, maybe increasing their presence, obviously with Serie A and the Portuguese league and the Dutch league and stuff. But
this is big time now. Yeah, Champions League. No, because it's funny.
Amazon was mentioning Dazan or
yeah.
Dazan, the other one.
Yeah.
It hasn't shocked people, say, within telly in terms of what's happened, but it's just more of a surprise of who's actually taking it on.
Yeah,
in terms
of the street. Listen, we've gone way over. I wanted to talk to you a bit about this game tomorrow. So, listen, let's put it this way. They should win. And if they don't win, I will certainly talk to you about this game over the coming days. Let's just leave it at that and hopefully. So, David Snade, people can check your piece out on The Examiner on this. I'm sure that, like, there's loads of interest in it. So they can check it out on the Irish Examiner website or buy the paper tomorrow in a move, you know, the opposite of LiveScore, buying a newspaper tomorrow. Dave, thanks a million. Cheers.
No worries, I'll take care. Have a good evening.
Thanks very much. David Snaid there with us. We're going to take a short break and then go over to Merseyside. Patrick Boyland is the Athletics Everton correspondent. Carlo Ancelotti seems to have caught everyone by surprise there and up sticks and pitched up at Madrid. And it seems Nuno Espirito Santo is quickly going to be installed as the next man. So we'll get all the details from Patrick.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
Welcome back. France 2-0 up on Wales. We have Germany 1-1 with Denmark, and England have taken the lead against Austria into the final 5 minutes in that game. Bukayo Saka with the goal on 57 minutes is where we are there. And Holland 2, Scotland 2 was a full-time result. Sounds that like that was an interesting game. So on Everton then, eventful times all of a sudden. Patrick Boyland covers Everton for The Athletic. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how's it going?
Great. You haven't been watching the England game this evening by any chance, have you?
I have caught the last kind of 15, 20 minutes when the Everton guys started to find their way onto the pitch. So Okay. Obviously a senior debut for Ben Godfrey and Dominic Calvert-Lewin on as well. Always good to see
Good. Those
guys getting some form of international recognition at least.
To put you on the spot, sorry, and then we'll get into Everton. We were just discussing before you joined us the booing at the start of the game as the players took the knee. And it was loud booing. We played the commentary of John Murray on Five Live, almost taken aback by the whole thing. Like, there's an instinct to listen to the people booing and say, what's the problem or what's the rationale? I mean, I can't figure one out. I got to be honest, being on the ground over there, what is this? What are they, when it's so specifically taking the knee, that is, when it's so specifically about, you would think, a fairly agreeable issue, i.e. racism is bad. What is the booing about?
Yeah, I feel myself pretty fortunate to cover a team and a fan base in Everton that tends not to do that kind of stuff. I mean, when fans were allowed in at Goodison Park last season, the taking the knee was met with warm applause on the whole. So I'm probably not the best person to explain this, but obviously it is a tendency now in certain parts of the country. And to understand it, it kind of almost goes over my head, but my guess is that these people believe that Black Lives Matter is something more than just an outlet for good, and that they look to protest, and you see silly stuff about people silly stuff from people who say that others are going out and protesting and ransacking streets and all that kind of stuff. Probably couldn't be further from the truth in reality, but that's unfortunately where we are and what we have to accept.
Yeah.
At this moment in time, is that there's plenty of work still to do.
Yeah, be interesting to see what some of the players say after the game tonight, I guess. You suspect it's going to be a big talking point now. So look, Everton, I mean, there was a quote from Carlo Ancelotti not 10 days ago saying how much he loved Everton and couldn't wait to get cracking next year and, you know, a long, happy future in the new stadium and all that stuff. And suddenly Madrid come calling and he couldn't get out of there quickly enough. And I guess it's understandable. I think he's a Spanish girlfriend and really enjoyed Madrid and they live in the city centre and, you know, he's had some success there. So he's gone. Everton fans and the job he's done, are they that upset that the guy, admittedly with a great name, but the guy who could only get them to 10th has gone? I mean, he wasn't exactly pulling up trees or inspiring much beyond where they should be.
No, he wasn't. You're entirely right. 10th is a disappointment given the money Everton have spent over the last few seasons. And I think the expectation was when Carlo Ancelotti came in that he'd be able to push them on much closer to the European spots almost. So I think Everton fans are more disappointed than anything else. They've seen a manager come in and seemingly embrace the project, embrace the city and the club. Carlo Ancelotti was very fond of telling us in the media how much he loved his walks along the Sefton coast, close to his home in Crosby, and how Everton was a family club and he'd really bought into this ethos. And it was only a few months ago in an interview with ourselves at The Athletic that he mentioned the kind of the greed, as he put it, of these European Super League clubs, this breakaway faction. So I think for us to see what's happened since, and quite how quickly it's happened, maybe suggests that maybe all it's not a particularly happy place on their side at this moment in time. I think Everton fans feel a little bit like they've been left jilted at the altar, and the club has been left in a state of flux. There's almost an acceptance from the fan base and from everybody, the one thing everybody is united on is the fact that there's work to be done on this Everton squad, substantial work to be done on this Everton squad over the summer. And they needed all the pieces in place to hit the ground running over the summer. So Ancelotti leaving leaves a massive dent there and a huge black hole. And this feeling that Everton have been left in the lurch somewhat at very short notice. Yeah. I think that's what rankles most, maybe even more than the fact that they've lost the manager of Carlo Ancelotti's stature.
Yeah, because initially things seemed quite bright. Money was spent, and like some of it excessive, you know, the likes of Gylfi Sigurdsson, good player and all, but like 50 million, everyone were paying big money for what they were getting. But then there were little, bright sparks. James Rodriguez arrives, probably the lure of Carlo Ancelotti helps his decision-making in coming to Everton. And you get to win a few games and it's a good start and you think, okay, this could be really interesting. Why did it fall off a cliff? Like, where are Everton short on the pitch?
Oh, they've already pinpointed a number of key areas they think, no matter how well Seamus Coleman has done in the right-back position over the last few seasons, they do believe that they're short of a long-term option in that position and at least somebody that could push Seamus on the pitch. They believe that they lack dynamism in forward areas, so that's cover up front, that's an option on the wing. Quite one-paced and static in the main, this current Everton side. So there was an acknowledgement that there was work to do, that they did need to bring in, I think Ancelotti was talking about, between three and four players this summer to more or less compete for starting positions. But to answer the question about what went wrong in the season itself, it was only Boxing Day that Everton win second place in the table and seemingly riding a crest of the wave. What I would say is that they had a lot of injuries, they had a persistent stream of injuries throughout the season, and the players looked tired and fatigued. That was one reason. They almost forgot how to play football, and I think that was part of that was down to Ancelotti's direction. When they started to pick up injuries, particularly James, when he was injured, Ancelotti would retreat into a much more negative, pragmatic and responsive setup.
Okay. Okay.
And then when they looked to break out of those quite narrow confines, they then had a struggle on their hands readapting to the free-flowing football of early in the season. And I guess one thing you can say about Carlo Ancelotti is that he's great at eking out every last drop from the top players, the very best players in the world. And you can maybe set up Real Madrid and set out to effectively just put your best players on the pitch, and 9 times out of 10, they will beat an Ibar or one of the minnows, one of the lesser lights in La Liga. But Everton don't have that calibre of player at this moment in time. And I think at times at home, they just looked a little bit devoid structurally, a little bit lacking in ideas. It was almost, as I've joked before, it was almost a give it to James approach and see if he could conjure something. So he in a sense, was part of the problem. I think he needed longer and would have been afforded longer to turn things around and to try and right some of those wrongs next season. But obviously that's not come to pass, and he's had an opportunity to go back to Real Madrid, the bright lights of Madrid. He obviously had a great time there, and he's taken that opportunity with both hands. There was any doubt in his mind that he was going to leave Everton Football Club when that offer came in.
No. And so to the replacement then, I've seen David Moyes linked with a return. I know he's agreed a 3-year deal with West Ham. May not have literally signed it, but I would be...
That's not signed yet.
Yeah, so, I'd be shocked personally. I mean, I don't know why he'd go there, why he'd go back when things are going so well at West Ham. But who knows, strange things have happened. The name which catches the eye is Nuno Espirito Santo. How close are they to deciding he's their guy, or are we still very early stages? They're still reeling.
We're still very early stages in the process. So Everton's board met on Tuesday to effectively brainstorm a list of targets. Board members were invited to give their own suggestions, but that was ground zero. Yeah. And it was very much a case of working their way up. I don't yet think we're at the stage where concrete offers are going to be made to managers. They will still need to analyse a list of targets, a long list of targets, it must be said, pour over all the information they've got, the statistics, and almost make a decision from there. And because Ancelotti leaving was such a surprise, I don't think there was a general sense of preparedness for this. It wasn't like they had a succession plan in place. And maybe some supporters will criticise that and say, well, that's why you've got a director of football. You should be ensuring a relatively seamless transition from one managerial regime to the next. Mm. But the fact of the matter is that that's by the by now. Everton didn't have that in place. They are assessing the viability and feasibility of a number of targets. Nuno is one of those. His name keeps on cropping up and keeps on being mentioned to us. Mm-hmm. David Moyes keeps being mentioned to us as well. But I'd be pained to stress that they're not the only two guys that are potentially in the frame here. And the other thing to say, of course, is that when Everton hired Ancelotti, originally David Moyes was the front runner for that, and Ancelotti was in the Napoli job. So I think that's a sign of how quickly things can change in football. I think Everton will have more of an idea towards the end of the week what they're likely to do. And I think they are almost prepared to bide their time and analyse a range of targets in order to get the right one. They know how important this next appointment will be.
Okay. Patrick Boland covers Everton for The Athletic. Thanks, Patrick. Appreciate it.
No worries, pleasure.
Cheers. Should let you know as well, Trent Alexander-Arnold has just limped off for England. And it's just gone full time in that game. They've beaten Austria 1-0, but Trent Alexander-Arnold limping off, seemed to be in pain straight away, signal to the bench, he was done. So I guess any injury now is serious-ish. Tournament gets underway in 11 days' time.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fake crowd noise. The Emirates never sounded so good. Gamble responsibly. Gamblingcare.ie.
The OTB Podcast Network with Get Set Go. Quick Start Car Insurance you can sort anytime, online, then bounce on with your day. Get a quote today at GetSetGo.ie.